Hello and welcome to episode 152 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is July 8th, 2019. I am Rollo McFlugel and with me is Slappy Jones 2, and we are both from McFlugel.com. Show notes page for this episode will be McFlugel.com/152, where you can check out our sponsor, LibertyMugs.com, where you can buy awesome libertarian-themed mugs. And also check out 10hoursofbitcoin.com. And if you are interested in helping us out with that, you can either leave a donation at the bottom of the page, or when you click that, it will take you to the Tallycoin donation page thing, where there will be information on what you can do to claim the $2,000 bounty for creating a wiki for attacks against Bitcoin. So, you know, hit me up if you have any questions with that, or Heavily Armed Clown or JW Weatherman. Any of us will be happy to give you some answers or some information, whatever you need.
Yeah, also head over to libertymugs.com and buy our new item for sale, which is Rollo's bathwater.
Oh, yeah.
$30 a jar.
Starting to do that. It's called tractor water. I was thinking about that. And I was like, that is one of the things that I never want to talk about on this. I was coming up with things that I never want to talk about on this podcast, and that was one of them.
And I dropped it.
Yeah. Like,
good.
Anything in that, anything that has anything to do with the word gamer was one of the topics that I don't ever want to have on this talk about. And there you did it. So
there it is.
That is just everything about it just is unbelievable to me. And
so anyway, $30 an ounce. Head on over.
Yeah.
Pick it up.
Don't sue me. It's not the drink. Well, you can drink it. I can't tell you what to do.
Yeah, but we don't recommend it.
No. We recommend just never mind. Just Slappy, introduce the actual topic, so, please.
For today's episode, we're going to talk about an email we received after last week's episode, where we were talking about Bitcoin maximalism. The guy brought up some good points and had some good questions. I don't think we told him we're going to be talking about this, did we?
No, I wasn't going to.
No, so we won't say his name.
Yeah, it wasn't like we were going to read his questions or his comments or anything. Just kind of.
But we're going to try to address his points.
Yeah, because it was something that we didn't address totally in the last episode, partially because I forgot, partially because, you know, we're running up on time.
Okay, you know. But I thought they were good questions, and or good points anyway. And one of the things he disagreed with, I would say, is what he thought you could do with these altcoins or alternate coins or tokens or whatever is essentially have it like an IPO and selling stock in your company. And so with the Girl Scouts, if they want to raise capital to increase their cookie production, they could release this Girl Scout coin and in order to raise capital. And then that Girl Scout coin could be used as money. I mean, you could trade it. Of course, they're going to trade it for Bitcoin or whatever, or the money, or they're going to sell it for Bitcoin. But then this coin is out there floating around. And I guess he was referring to that being ownership in the company, or at least ownership in some cookies that you could exchange it for, in the future. And why do you think that wouldn't work or shouldn't work?
Well, it's in the case of the Girl Scout cookie coin. The big thing there is that it just, and we talked about this in the last episode, is that you're bartering at that point. If I want to buy Girl Scout cookies, I need to buy this cookie token, Girl Scout cookie token. Are you talking about more of the raising money?
Yeah, it's an IPO. So you're like funding the corporation by just do today. They issue stock and then you trade your dollars for this stock. And that stock is essentially acting like a coin, and you can do what you want with it. You can trade that stock if you want. You can give it to, you can gift it to someone. You can.
Sure.
You can cut my lawn and I can give you a stock, whatever. We could trade it that way. So essentially it's acting like money. But the dollars is what that company wanted to, in this case, the Girl Scouts wanted to raise dollars or Bitcoin ICO example. You know what I'm saying? So that
I was jumping off something that we already talked about last episode, but yeah, so it's an asset that's tradable.
Yes.
But it's something that they use to raise money, and then it just becomes the way their network is the way that they, it gets traded. So my issue with that is that it assumes that it will have sufficient amount of proof of work or security across the network. Otherwise, it wouldn't be trivially attacked. I mean, we look across most of these various altcoins, and none of them come close to stacking up to the proof of work that Bitcoin has. And I know that they run different algorithms, so it's not, you can't just take a Bitcoin miner and switch it over to some random altcoin necessarily. But what it does show is that the amount of electricity costs that it takes to secure just any random altcoin compared to Bitcoins is just a very, very small number. And so if someone really wanted to attack one of these really small minority networks, that's a bigger player would easily come up with the capital to invest in, ASICs to run the algorithm to just obliterate it. So what you're gaining in, escaping the clutches of the government or doing whatever you're trying to do, and I don't really think buys you anything because of that massive security threat. The reason that Bitcoin works is that it dominates proof of work, and that it's not for someone to come and attack Bitcoin, it's going to take not only a lot of electricity to just try to run an attack and try to get most of the hash to kind of dominate the blocks that are created. But there's also a huge capital investment that has to be made in order to even purchase and build up that that network of your mining equipment. So it's the very high cost to it's the whole point of the network, is that it becomes more expensive to cheat it than to play by the rules. So it takes bad intentions and kind of turns them into good. But when you don't have to do much to overturn a network like that, then that kind of idea doesn't apply. And so I think that's where a lot of people go wrong with this idea of, tokenizing a lot of this stuff, is that they assume that the security is going to be there.
Right. Where, if you're going to decentralize, it has to be secure.
Right. Right. Because the reason why a lot of things are centralized is because it's more secure.
It's more secure. Exactly.
And that's I don't know where you want to take it, but I wanted to just comment on the whole, blockchain, not Bitcoin thing.
Sure.
And the kind of the meme for decentralization. I know that as libertarians, we've often talked a lot about decentralization even before Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies came around. In that, we're trying to decentralize the government. We don't want the centralization, the central planning. We want this kind of, I don't really know that it was ever said this way before Bitcoin, but decentralized decision-making, in that we just wanted the market to kind of come up with things. We didn't want the central planning because of all the flaws and the issues that come with it. But, once Bitcoin became a thing and we got used to talking about decentralized and how important decentralization is, I think it kind of got, attached to these other things. So it became more of like a meme, and that's kind of the thing that everyone says. And everyone has these ideas to create these whatever systems, and it's decentralized. It's great. I mean, there's a lot of social media that's popping up out there that uses this decentralization thing. I remember there was I was on Tom Woods a while ago. Someone was coming up with this, the health records or something.
Yeah.
And he put it, he attached an ICO to it, and it's like, oh, it's this decentralized thing. So, well, why? Like, it doesn't make sense. If you can, we just talked about all, you know, the security issues with it. Like, why would you do that? Why would you leave it up? If it's your project and something that you care about, why would you leave it up to a bunch of strangers to, like, democratize something? Like Liberty Mugs, the business that we kind of run, that we do run. I do not want that decentralized. I want that centralized to Slappy and I. Like, what would be our incentive to have other people make decisions for us and determine how that goes and everything? Unless we were trying to raise money and create and get capital, but there's other ways of doing that that doesn't involve, you know, trying to create a cryptocurrency with it.
Let's go there. What if we wanted to raise capital? And so you're going to sell ownership stake in Liberty Mugs.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you still want a controlling interest. You still want to keep at least 51%. So why not create a coin where you own, you know, let's say there's going to be, I don't know, 100 tokens, and you own 60 of them and you sell 40 of them, and then they can be traded however they want, and that counts as an ownership stake in Liberty Mugs, and maybe you give out a dividend somehow. I don't know how that would work, but why couldn't that work, or why could that work? Like, could we get rid of the stock market and the SEC using blockchain technology or these tokens?
Well, I think that I don't know if the stock exchange is going to continue to exist or not in the Bitcoin future. I do think the SEC will go away, but how does that, if you have ownership in a company, that means you have some authority to make decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how would we even enforce that decision making?
You own more than half of it, so you make. I mean, we, you know, if they all vote to close and you don't, or they all vote to sell, so let's say this: you own 60. There's 100 outstanding shares or tokens. You own 60. Random people own 40. The 40 people think Rallo's bathwater is disgusting. We want to stop selling it, but they only own 40% of the company. You override their decision by the 60 shares, so you're still running it. They might have some claim to the profits,
but how would that be, like, unless we, you know, put the whatever the website was going to be that you ran your own node, and the people that controlled their shares were running. I'm saying, like, in the case that, you know, we don't know that I'm going to own 60% of the shares in perpetuity, I might decide to sell some of those shares off.
Sure.
And then in that case, how do we do the voting for that? You would have to do it by running a node, right?
I don't know. I you tell me.
It would have to be. I mean, because otherwise, how do you enforce the voting other than doing it in a centralized way?
Yeah.
The way it's done currently. And that's fine. I mean, that's fine if you That's the other thing, is that I don't know, like, all these ICOs that come out and say, like, oh, I'm, you know, I want to create stake in this, is that unless you're running a node.
And I don't really understand the ICOs, to, like, perfectly honest with you. I really don't get it, because when you own a company, you know, if they declare a dividend or whatever, it has to go to the person who owns the stock, which is registered, so they know who owns the stock.
Yeah,
in this sense, how would you know? I don't, like, this is an actual question. Like, I don't know how you would know who owns what token and how you would pay a dividend.
The thing is, too, that I don't know that I think we're kind of assuming some things right now, is because I don't know that the point of ICOs was to give stake in ownership. Right for ownership. I think it was just like, we're raising money and, you know, you're speculating. Yeah, you could buy this token that
might be worth more someday that you could sell.
Right. Yeah, it was just them speculating on the value of the token.
All the altcoins were going through the roof at random times, and so it's like, get it real cheap, we'll raise our money, or, you know, raise capital, and then you can sell this in the future. So it wasn't even really for ownership stake in the company.
Right. I don't, there might have been some that tried to do that. I don't know, but I think
I don't know either.
It's clear that like there needs to be some like mechanism to enforce that, that if you're trying to be decentralized, and that's the thing, it's okay to have centralization sometimes.
That's what I was just going to say. I mean, now if we sold it and kept our own database of who owned what and could pay that dividend to that person. And so if you wanted to sell it and to make sure you keep your ownership stake or your dividends or whatever, you would have to let us know about that when you sell it.
Right. And you can, you know, you could say, well, if you have centralization, then, you know, there's going to, if the government wants to crack down on you, then they can. But in the cases of all these ICOs, they're still next to squeeze for the government. Is there a single altcoin out there that if the government wanted to shut it down, they couldn't just get a couple people and tell them, either you go to jail for the rest of your life, or these other bad things are going to happen, or, you know, you shut it down or run it the way we want to. Even the network with the second most hash rate or second most security behind it. Well, security, we'll just, whatever, is Ethereum, and it's basically Vitalik.
Right.
And Vitalik calls the shots, and maybe he's got a small group of people, but it's a small group of guys that are all tightly knit. So, I mean, it's not decentralized at all. And so if we're saying, like in the case of if we had a Liberty Mugs ICO to create a stock, then if the government wanted to shut us down for some reason, they would just grab our neck, and then there goes Liberty Mugs, and the tokenization and everything, and the quote unquote decentralization from running a crap coin doesn't do anything, because they've just shut the business down. Because I don't know how. I guess you could try to run the website off a decentralized thing, but I mean, it's going to be slow and crappy, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah. So what about smart contracts that we keep hearing about with these altcoins?
Well, I don't know that any of them have been successful. I know, pick on Ethereum again, they did it with the DAO, and then they didn't like what happened with it, so they just reversed it all, which is an example of it not being decentralized.
Don't want it to happen.
It ended up being the guy. I think there was one person that like figured out a bug in the code they wrote, and so he got a bunch of Ethereum or something. I might be butchering the story, but the gist of it, I think, is pretty correct. And so they didn't realize that the code they wrote was going to have some certain effect. So this guy, one guy, was making a lot of money off it. And so when they realized that, this guy did not break any of the rules. This is supposed to be the Bitcoin thing, the blockchain, the quote unquote blockchain thing is supposed to be, you know, its code is the law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was following the law, and then they decided they didn't like what their
they
law,
didn't like what happened.
Their own law.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just said, nah, we're reversing
it. They reversed it.
So, like, it hasn't worked. And, you know, Bitcoin has its own smart contracts. The Lightning Network is an example of that. That's working. And so that's the other thing, that if you want to raise money, if we decided we wanted to raise money with for Liberty Mugs, there's no reason why we couldn't do it, that it wouldn't be better to just do it any of the traditional ways. I mean, I don't think we're going to go public, but there's stuff like, even like you can use Patreon or something to raise money and provide, kickbacks for people, or, you know, a Kickstarter, GoFundMe. There's sorts of things for little guys to be able to raise money and, you know, make a deal with the people that are sending them money. Or even if you don't want to go the purely traditional, not pure, I say purely traditional, but I don't think GoFundMe and Kickstarter are purely traditional. But if you want to do kind of the Bitcoin thing, then you can why not raise money with Bitcoin? Like literally just like accept Bitcoin as the money that you're raising. It's more difficult for the government to crack down on, since, you know, they have basically not much at control at all over, or no control at all of where the Bitcoin flows. But with dollars, they do. They can shut your bank account down. I don't know how successful they would be at shutting down your address.
Right.
I forget where I was going with that.
Traditional ways of raising money.
Yeah. So it's, you can, they can shut it down. They can shut your faucet off more easily if you're using dollars as opposed to Bitcoin. Or two, if you even wanted to get more creative, then you can use sidechains to leverage the Bitcoin proof of work.
So talk about that. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So I am not a good person to talk the details of sidechains because it is a little bit more complicated, and I might go over my head real quickly.
Real high level.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have the gist of it. So it's a sidechain is when a group of entities get together and they form this sidechain, for lack of a better word, that's kind of like secondary blockchain that uses the Bitcoin proof of work to secure it. But there's agreement among these entities, however many there are, to the state of that chain. And so you need to have a certain number of them. I don't know if it's a simple majority or what it is. They have to agree on what that state is. And so if one or two entities decide to be bad actors, they can't just run away with all the money. You have to have the majority of them turn into bad actors for the state to be changed in a way that is not based on the way that all the users would agree on. So it also creates a good way to send Bitcoin to and from the side chain. So it might be beneficial to, you know, when you buy a token on the side chain or something, that it eliminates some friction or having to trust someone that when you're sending your Bitcoin to them, that it's that you're getting what you want, like Liberty Monks, you know. That's the thing. And remind me to go back and talk about this, about this decentralization thing. Like if you were to buy a Liberty Mug with Bitcoin, you know, the Bitcoin transaction sending me the money is trustless as far as using the software goes. But you still have to trust that I'm not going to rip you off once I get the money. I still have to send you the mug. The
mug still has to go out.
So, and if I'm incorrect about this on sidechains, please someone correct me. But I do believe that that's kind of one of the benefits of it, is that it uses the network or the software to be able to buy and sell whatever you're doing on the sidechain using like kind of not a normal transaction, but a Bitcoin transaction. So I think you would avoid that step of trust. Mm-hmm. If you're buying that asset. So it's a way to do it that you don't have to like try to recreate money to have something. And there are some benefits of doing that. I mean, it's, if you were to set up you know, like a stock exchange without the oversight of the federal government, the stock exchange is there. Do you want to explain why a stock exchange exists?
Well, first off, companies sell off ownership stake in their company to raise money for capital investments typically. And then they're traded on a market. So you buy, you know, AT&T does an initial public offering. They're selling equity in their company. You buy some of it. They get their money. They can do what they want with it in order to expand or get more efficient or whatever they're going to do. And now you own part of the company. And that entitles you to vote for the board or for, and you know, certain decisions, go to stockholder meetings, get dividends potentially. And if you don't want to own that company anymore, you can sell it. And so the market's there where you can trade companies, essentially. Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Well enough? Is that what you were getting at? Or?
Well, no, that is. But also, you know, how do they... How does it work so that the company, say that you're Slappy Co.
Yeah,
and you have your IPO and you have 100 shares and you sell off 60 or 40 of them.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know that you're not like just creating shares out of thin air in your little database that keeps track of all the shares so that you sell off, like you create more. Let's say that you create another 10,
if I'm gonna
you sell
buy
off five
there.
And keep five just so that there's
– so there's
you're selling more, but you're maintaining your
– Yeah, so companies do increase their shares through stock splits and stuff. But there's laws around that the SEC – you know, everything has to be registered through the SEC. And so, you know, it's been a while since my finance classes – But if they did say we have 100 outstanding shares and we want 200 outstanding shares, you double everyone who owns. If you owned 5 shares, you now own 10 shares, but the price cuts in half essentially.
Right.
So you're no better off. You're no better or worse off after a split, unless the price goes up after that, and then you can sell some and have
sure.
But how they know that? I imagine there's a central database somewhere where they're keeping track of who owns what, and so when a dividend is issued, you get it. Your stock is registered somewhere, and it's owned in your account, and when they declare a dividend, you get it because there's a database that says you get it.
Right. So there'd be a way to make sure that a company isn't creating shares out of thin air without notifying the shareholders,
right?
Some way on the up and up that they're not, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, right. That's the market would fall apart if they could.
Sure,
because no one would trust it.
Right, and so if there was a company that started doing that, and the stock exchange was not doing a good job of, you know, policing that, right?
Yeah.
Then they would probably say, well, if this gets found out, it's going to cause trouble for everyone trading on the stock exchange. So we better leave this one and go to another one. And there are multiple, there's the New
York.
There
are multiple. There's New York. There's one in Philadelphia.
Right. So there's,
Chicago Mercantile.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of exchanges all over the world. And you can register your company on that exchange. And so, you know, I imagine that exchange is the one keeping track. So if the exchange wasn't, that would be an issue.
Yeah. So there's a good way. I mean, and that's kind of the reason that there is a way to keep track of that without having to do like this, you know, Rube Goldberg machine of decentralization to keep track of that. There is a good way of doing that. And you might say, well, no, it's not a good way because the SEC has control of it. The government has control of it. They can tell it what to do. But we already kind of said that even if you tried to go around that without it, then, you know, what happens when the government wants to crack down on any of these other
mm-hmm.
ICOs or altcoins out there? There's a neck to grab. So all it does is kind of create this mirage of security against government just because the government hasn't really decided to do anything about
right.
it yet. But if they wanted to, they could. Whereas with Bitcoin, not that it's that there's never a way that the government could figure out a way to get enough money to attack it, but it's way, way, way more difficult than in this other stuff. It's right mm-hmm. now, a lot of these altcoins are simply exist because the government has decided not to crack down on them, as opposed to them being like, we're not really sure that we could do it. I mean, we might be able to try, but there's definitely
it's
no guarantee.
It's going to be expensive doing it.
Right. So that's really kind of a big thing. And I don't know was there anything else kind of on this topic specifically?
From the email specifically?
Well, I wanted to touch on so I didn't forget about it, talking about we don't need I think people over talk about decentralization.
Yeah, let's go Bitcoin. There. Like, what really needs to be decentralized? And like, why would you want, like you mentioned Liberty Mugs, we don't want that decentralized.
Sure. And there's like anything that touches Bitcoin, I feel like people think that anything that touches Bitcoin, that it needs to be decentralized too, or that it needs to be run on the blockchain or something. Well, yeah, other than money, I mean, there's a reason why you want to have money be decentralized. And that's because you don't want someone controlling it so that they can
manipulating it.
Right, manipulate it. That's why gold failed, because it ended up, in order for it to work more smoothly and to scale up,
had to be centralized.
Right. And that exposed a neck to be squeezed by the government, which they did. Immediately did.
Yes. And then
in multiple and in various ways it happened, whether mm-hmm. it was like the British did it by with the Bank of England, they just kind of were trading favors for laws between the bank and the government, and eventually it just culminated into what we have now. The United States is a little bit different. There's a little bit more of a struggle, took a little bit longer to do it, but it eventually
incrementally
did it. Right.
Continued to do things all throughout the 20th century.
So if you have a decentralized network with Bitcoin that's very expensive to attack, and there's no one there that can say like, well, you know what, you know, 21 million Bitcoin, I'd like to create a little bit more. I could make a little bit money. I can make some money off that if that happens. There's no good way of doing that.
Right.
Especially, I don't know that I really hope that there will never be a way that inflates the money supply, or at least that it's agreed to that the money supply gets inflated, because it's such an important part of Bitcoin's value proposition. So
what about, could they, I guess, could they take it out more decimal points?
Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so. I don't know enough about it, but the, someone did make a Bitcoin transaction. I think it was on the Lightning Network that was for less than a Satoshi. Someone kind of, I remember hearing it on a podcast. I forget the term that's even used to describe how they did it, but it went way over my head.
Yeah. Okay.
But apparently it's possible. I think I've heard someone say that it's not that great of an idea. But it's one of those things that, you know, we can cross that bridge.
Well, yeah. No, I was just curious.
And then there's always layers on top of Bitcoin that could be used to deal with that. But I think we've established that money has to be decentralized. It's like the whole point.
Yeah, we've had several episodes about that.
Right. Right.
I mean,
so things that are built on top of Bitcoin, or things that use Bitcoin, there's this tendency for people to just jump to this conclusion that they need to be decentralized too. But I mean, let's picture some point in the future where Bitcoin has become money and everyone's using it back and forth. And you go to the grocery store to buy your food, and now it's time to check out. I don't think that when you go to pay for your food, that there's going to be some cryptographic algorithm that occurs that transfers the food to for the money, that there's no way of trying to cheat it.
Right.
Like or maybe the food store is a bad example, because the checkout is more like two people standing there exchanging stuff. But let's just go back to Liberty Mugs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there's going to be some, you go online and you go and you buy, you send us your money to buy a mug. Like, you still have to trust us that we're going to send you the mug.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe there's going to be a way that the software
automatically sends it out.
Well, it does. It does already.
Yeah. Interesting.
Although there is a company that, you know, does the fulfillment. But there's going to be these layers of trust that are involved, because that's just the nature of the world. I don't know. I haven't thought enough or figured out whether or not it's going to happen, that there's going to be ways that you can make this everything completely trustless. But that's not the problem with the world right now. The problem with the world is not that you're going online and getting ripped off all the time. Although that is a problem for businesses with chargebacks for credit cards, but that's, you know, chargebacks for credit cards is not the reason why we're seeking an alternative to the fiat standard that we have right now, the US dollar standard, and putting Bitcoin there instead. It's because of the centralization of the money system. So all of the transactions, all of the things that happen person to person, all these voluntary interactions, those are not the problem, the problems that we need to solve. Right. Yeah, there's some people steal every once in a while, but we have mechanisms to deal with that and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And if it really were a problem, then I guarantee you that you wouldn't be so quick and easy, or so quick to put your credit card information or send Bitcoin or something else buy something across the other side of the world. That's a trust that's there that I don't think we have to worry about, because there's not this massive amount of ripping off, because if there were, then, you know, we'd be talking about it a lot more. It'd be a huge issue. We wouldn't be, you know, the e-commerce wouldn't be as big of a deal.
No.
Wouldn't be as massive as it is if people were getting ripped off all the time.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know how much this fits in, but I'm old enough to remember when e-commerce really started coming around, and my parents would say, never buy anything online. You don't know where that credit card number is going. So there had to be some kind of trust established, because now my parents shop on Amazon all the time. Every time I go there, there's Amazon boxes. So, you know, I don't know how long it took them to finally trust the internet, but
not that long though. Cause I remember my parents.
No, not that long at all.
I remember myself thinking the same way. I remember for a while I felt very weird about giving my credit card information out. And you know what? Probably in the beginning, there probably was a lot more fraud.
There probably was. And they got rooted out.
Right. They figured out ways to do it. I mean,
and that's how PayPal came into existence, to have a trusted third party. Like, the market develops, right?
Yeah. There's no way that you're like the internet, the e-commerce could work if you were sending out your credit card information just like open for the world to see.
Right.
That those 16 numbers plus the expiration date and the other three-digit code, that they were just sent out to the internet like it was a billboard or a plane with a banner flying across the sky to get it to the vendor. It's encrypted. They figured out ways to deal with that very well.
Mm-hmm. And mistakes still happen.
Sure.
But it's rare, and it's big news. I don't know. Actually, I don't know how rare it is, but it's big news when Target got hacked a couple years ago.
Right.
So, you know, if it happened every day, it wouldn't be big news.
Sure. Yeah. And that is a problem when that kind of thing happens. But, and I think we do, that's another problem is that actually is something that Bitcoin will probably solve pretty well, is that that these payment systems, it's not, when I was saying that we don't have a problem to solve with the trust, it's not exactly, should have been more specific, that it's not exactly the payment system that I'm talking about. It's the fact that you're sending your money to someone and they're going to give you the product or service that you ask for.
Yeah,
because there's plenty of security risks with the current payment processors that they do have all this information in databases. So that is actually another problem that Bitcoin can solve, is eliminating a lot of that because of the just the nature of the way the processing happens. So there's a lot more privacy connected with it. And a lot of the problem with the database, the collecting the information, is because of state regulation.
Mm-hmm.
So they require businesses to do that. So
yep.
There wouldn't be nearly as much information storage that we see today, if the government were involved, it would be more just like keeping whatever information they need just to, for marketing purposes. Like, you know, you tend, if you're a business and you get someone's email address, it's not something you want to give up.
Right.
Or back in the day, maybe their address, so you can send them stuff in the mail.
Right.
But you don't necessarily want to have the liability of storing all of their other information. Because if it does get hacked, then, you know, it's kind of on you that the data got breached. So it's some interesting wormholes to go down there.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to back off what I was saying, that these problems need to be solved, because they don't. Because even in a Bitcoin world, at Liberty Mugs, I still need to collect your address to send you the mug. And all these other things, you know, that point still holds, and still holds very strong, I think.
Right.
So.
And
anyway, I think we've been going for a while. I always forget to look at the time.
I forget what time we started as well. But not everything needs to be decentralized.
Nah, just bottom money. Line. Yeah, just money and
government.
Well, even if we get the decentralized money, I think that
the rest will fall in place.
That'll take care of the decentralization of the state, I think.
As that congressman said maybe it was a month or two ago. What was his name? Sherman out in California.
Sherman.
Sherman. Sherman's. He's worried about Bitcoin, and he says it's going to. I forget his exact words, but the United States depends on the dollar basically to control the world. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have the dollar, we don't control the world. So that was pretty cool that he said that. And hopefully that comes to fruition.
Absolutely. So, Slappy, do you have a free market success story? We forgot to talk about this before we went on, but.
No, I don't. And do you?
Sure. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I just thought of one. I went on a fishing trip yesterday and it's a charter boat for my dad's birthday. And we chartered the same boat a couple years before, and we went out a lot further because we were going fishing for sea bass back then. But it was bad weather that day, and I was throwing up before we were even halfway out there. And it was like the worst day of my life. Yeah. If you've never experienced being really seasick,
haven't.
Yeah. It is the worst thing in the world. You just like, I remember laying there when we haven't even like gotten where we were yet and being like, I have 8 more hours of this and there's no going back unless you're dying there. You know, they weren't going to send the boat back. So it is not good. So this time around, we bought some Dramamine at the, I don't even know where we bought it, but you can buy it anywhere. And, you know, took a dose the day before and then took a couple more the morning of, and I felt great all day. The weather was very nice and it was behaving itself, but I actually do get motion sickness pretty easily. Like I can't read in the car, and even I've been on little boats in the back bay, go like fishing and crabbing where there basically are no waves, and have gotten a little bit woozy.
Really?
On that. So yeah, even I went on like 2 weeks ago, we went to the boardwalk down there, and I went on, my nephew wanted me to go on the one ride with him. It was like you lay down and you're supposed to like flying through the air. It just just spins you in a circle and goes up and down. And I had to like,
it's a little rough for you.
I felt a little woozy. I had to like start looking out at the distance and stop, you know, looking and laughing and smiling at him. So that's why I wanted to say, well, obviously, because someone would come back and say, well, you said the weather was bad the first time and the waves weren't bad this time. But, you know, being 12 miles out, there's waves in the ocean, and they would still get me. But because of the pill, the artificial pill. And you know what? If that takes a year off the end of my life, that's fine. Because I got to enjoy that day. It. Yeah, it was worth it for me to enjoy that day yesterday. So maybe that's very high time preference of me. But, you know, once Bitcoin becomes a money standard, then we'll be able to generate so much wealth that they'll be able to figure out how to reverse the effects of long-term effects of Dramamine.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
The market will provide.
Yeah. So, all right. The show notes page again is mcflugel.com/152. We've talked about Liberty Mugs the whole episode. So why don't you go there and test us out. Make sure we don't rip you off.
Yeah.
So go buy a mug with, that's the other thing. There's the whole merchant adoption thing.
Yeah.
Well, we need to do that. Well,
we got it.
Yeah. We sell mugs for Bitcoin and we do not sell the Bitcoin. So it is really just a scam for us to get your Bitcoin.
Yes. But you get a mug.
Yeah. But
guarantee
you can,
it.
Yeah, you can dump your fiat on us too. We'll also accept that.
Take that.
And also, we're talking about Bitcoin this entire episode, so I'll give another shout out to Bitcoin, 10hoursofbitcoin.com. So if you're interested in donating, we would love that, so we can help. You can help pay for the bounty for the $2,000 for the Bitcoin, the wiki for the attacks on Bitcoin. So also, just go there to get a very, very good education on Bitcoin to really kind of understand the value proposition of Bitcoin and put you in a spot that you want to be able to start buying it and getting involved. You really need to understand it. You really need to make an investment. 10 hours might seem like a lot of time, but if you break that up, you can, you know, listen to your on your car and stuff while you're going to and from work or doing other stuff. It is something that you really do need to invest time and energy into. There's no other way around it unless you're just a, I don't know, some sort of super genius that just figures it out and understands it. But I like
it's worth it.
Yeah, to get involved in Bitcoin and even just to buy it, I think it is very important to understand what's going on economically and technically. You don't have to be an expert by any stretch of the imagination. You just need some degree of proficiency that will help you not make dumb decisions once you buy the Bitcoin. So 10hoursofbitcoin.com will be linked in the show notes page. So that's all I had, Slappy. Do you have anything else?
No, that's it.
All righty. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Peace.